The Cambridge Marketing Podcast with Kiran Kapoor. Brought to you by Cambridge Marketing College. See their range of courses and apprenticeships at marketingcollege.com.
Hello and welcome. This week we are in the world of marketing careers. And I'm delighted to welcome Mark Hirschberg, who is a tech CTO, an instructor at MIT, and the author of the Careers Toolkit. Mark, welcome. Can we start with where you are geographically?
Thank you for having me on. I am speaking to you from the heart of New York City, right in Midtown Manhattan.
Wow, and tell me that the weather's gorgeous because it's horrible in the UK.
I think we imported some of your weather here today, but it will start to get nicer now that spring is here.
Lovely. I wish I could say the same sitting in a very grey Cambridge. So could we start with a little bit about yourself? You've been a tech CTO and you're quite a serial entrepreneur.
I came out of MIT back in the 90s during the dot-com era, and I began my career as a software engineer. I realized that I wanted to become a CTO, a chief technology officer. And as I looked at what I needed to do to get that role, I realized, yes, I needed to be a good engineer, but there were a bunch of other skills I would also need. Leadership, team building, hiring, networking, negotiating, all these skills, I had heard about them, but no one sat me down and told me how to do it. So I began to develop those skills myself. We didn't have great podcasts like this back in the day. And as I was doing so, I realized that these skills apply to everyone, not just the C-level people. So as I developed them in myself, I began to train up my team as well, knowing they'd be more effective, the organization would be more effective. And I went on, I've been a CTO, I've been doing this for quite a while now. But what wound up happening is MIT was getting similar feedback. Companies were saying, you need to put these skills in your students because we're not finding them. Not just in your students, by the way, in anyone, all people, all levels, all industries, we can't find them. So I unexpectedly got pulled into creating a class referred to as MIT's Career Success Accelerator. And in parallel to my tech job, I've been teaching there for over 20 years and then turned that into the book, The Career Toolkit, and then the app and some speaking that I do on that topic as well. It's fun. I get to do cool tech stuff and I get to help people with their careers.
Great. So we're sort of talking about what we tend to call soft skills, which is actually quite, I always think that's a little bit derogatory. These are very important skills.
I like the term firm skills. Okay. It feels a little more concrete. And it's a play on the words firm, meaning corporation. It's not quite as quantitative as hard skills. But yes, we need these firm skills. And this is a problem that has historical origins. When you think about the modern education system, now I don't know the history of the English education system quite as well. In the U.S., school, and particularly high school, that only goes back about 150 years. It comes from the Industrial Revolution as we were leaving the farms, where mom and dad taught us everything we needed to know. Now we needed to have reading, writing, and arithmetic that we could go into a factory and not touch the buzzsaw while it was spinning. And we just needed basic knowledge. You did not need networking skills to be effective in your job on the assembly line. Mm-hmm. Leadership wasn't a key criteria. Even when we moved into corporations, it was very hierarchical. It was the structural organization where you sat there as the cog in the machine, and your supervisor, who knew more than you, would tell you what to do, just because he didn't have time to do it, so you did, and then when you're done, he'd tell you what to do next. Mm-hmm. But when you look at today's organizations, that's not how we function. Today, for example, you might have a 24-year-old recently out of college, who's maybe a junior in marketing, and you've got a 54-year-old chief marketing officer, and that 54-year-old looks at the 24-year-old and says, what's TikTok and how do we use it? Mm-hmm. And this young person knows more, and yeah. She has to help drive and lead the company, and the person, presumably more senior, has to sit back and let her lead. So it's mm-hmm. a different type of structure. We're now working in flatter, more dynamic organizations with different people. We need these new sets of skills to be effective in this type of environment.
So are the sort of hard skills still important? before we get into the firm skills? Is it still important for, you said you wanted to be a CTO, so you worked out what you needed to do. There must have been a certain level of knowledge that you needed as well.
Yes, and I would say the hard skills are perhaps even becoming more important. For example, we now have a lot more data in our world, and we have to make data-based decisions. When I think about marketing, I was a big fan of the TV show Mad Men. And what would happen on that show? The clients would come in unhappy, and Don Draper would do some impassioned speech and land the client.
Yeah.
Really cool television.
Yeah.
Today, that does not work, because today the client says, show me the numbers. I want to see all the ad campaigns. I want to see what the ROI is. I want to see the conversion rates, and it is all quantitative analytical data. And that's what we have to do to drive business, to drive sales, to drive customer success. So we're seeing a lot more quantitative thinking in fields that traditionally have not been as quantitative. So we do need to employ those skills. Do not think it's one or the other. It's both.
I think that's a really good point. And yes, you're right. I mean, we used to be able to take decisions based on, well, it just feels right. I don't think many clients would accept that now.
Sadly, no.
Okay, so you talk about, in your book, you talk about essential skills that no one taught you. And you're right. Back in the day, we didn't teach leadership because we just, you became a leader because you became a manager just because you were good at your job. So you got promoted to the next level. So can you talk me through what the essential skills are that you see?
I break them down into 10 skills. Now, you will see lists that range from 5 to 50. It's all the same list. It's really just where you're drawing the lines, how many buckets you're putting it into. So the 10 skills that I use, 3 sections and 10 chapters in the book. First section on careers, how to create and execute a career plan. Because for most people, their plan is, yeah, hope to get promoted one day. But no, you actually need a plan to do that. How to be effective at work, things like managing your manager, understanding corporate culture, the unwritten rules about what you need to do. Third is interviewing. Now, many people say, oh, well, my school or other training teaches me how to interview. And we do a decent job of that as a candidate, but many of us have to hire people as part of our job. We hire peers, we hire subordinates, and we've given people no training in how to do this. Mm-hmm. People are so important to the company's success. Well, yeah, hopefully you do it right. Mm-hmm. Second section, leadership and management. There's a chapter on leadership, a chapter on people management, which is different. Management and leadership are different from each other, related, but subtly different. And then process management, which is different from people management. The third section, interpersonal dynamics, has 4 chapters, 4 skills: communication, networking, negotiations, and ethics. So those are the 10 buckets I use.
Okay, we won't be able to explore all of those, but there's a few there that are, you know, really sort of stand out. So I'm very interested in the idea of executing a career plan. Speaking as somebody who had what is now known as a squiggly career, started client side, went agency side, went freelance, went, you know, consultancy, then ended up running a college, which was never on the career path. So how do you execute a career plan when the world is changing and squiggly careers are actually becoming the big thing?
Well, let's look at from a different frame.
Okay.
Imagine your client comes to you and says, I need you to execute a big media campaign, a big launch for me. You've got 6 months to get this done. You say, okay, sounds good. It's January 1st today. I'll see you July 1st and cross your fingers, hope that we do the launch right.
Yep.
No client would ever accept that.
No.
They say, not so fast. Why don't you get me a plan? And let's do a check-in perhaps once a month. And I want to see, are you on plan? Are you off plan? Now, we know any plan you come up with on January 1st, that's not exactly how it's going to go. And your client understands that as well. Mm-hmm. But because you have this check-in, you can see, how are we doing? And it's okay, and maybe not okay for you, the agency, but when the client says halfway through, change of plans, new goal, say, okay, well, we're going to adjust the plan. Mm-hmm. And we know it's not perfect, but we know that if you don't have a plan, your chance of success is nearly zero. The same thing is true for our careers. If you can't do a 6-month project at work, how the heck are you going to do 6 years, 10, 20, 30 years of your career without a plan? So the key is you want to create a plan. We know two things. It's never going to work out according to plan, and that's okay. We're going to adjust the plan as we go by doing this check-in. And we know that it's going to be a little fuzzier further out. What you're doing in 7 to 10 years, that can be more of a placeholder. What you're doing in 7 to 10 months should be a little more concrete. Now, here's a simple technique you can use. I'm going to ask you to pause the podcast, but you have to come back. Pause the podcast, open up your cell phone, and put a calendar event that says, think about my career plan, and set that as a recurring meeting every 6 months. And so now that you've done that, now you're back listening to the podcast, you now have a check-in every 6 months to see, how am I doing? What do I need to adjust? And you're not going to go years crossing your fingers and just hoping.
And I'm intrigued with your own career, because you started off, you wanted to be a tech CTO, so you planned everything out. And then the next thing that came along was you realized that you could become an MIT instructor, and you've obviously been doing that for a while. So how did that fit in your plan? When you were planning, what did you do around those two sort of slightly different areas?
That's a great question, because I am a planner. I said I want to be a CTO, and I had the plan, and what am I going to do the next few years? How do I build up these skills? And I put myself on that track. One thing I talk about in the book is, and you noted, we can't plan for everything. Your company could do layoffs. You could get a new manager who you don't like and you change jobs. The company could pivot. There could be a global pandemic or wars, and all these things can throw us off, recessions. So your plan can't be static. The world changes. One of the changes that happened to me along the way is someone said, hey, can you help us out in this course? And I really thought, I met them, I was just giving them content. I said, wait, please stay and help out. I thought, okay, I'll help out for a few weeks. This will be a cool, fun thing to do. I said, don't leave yet. We want you to stay even longer and help teach. And so these were unexpected things, but in a positive way. And I sat down and said, is this worth my time? Should I be continuing more focus on what I'm doing, or focusing on a hobby, or focusing on something else? Well, this was worth my time and attention. It wasn't planned, but because I understood what I was doing, I had that framework for my career, I could assess whether something should be added or removed, and thankfully this was additive.
So that's quite interesting. So your question was phrased not how I expected you to. So you phrased it as, is this worth my time? Which, yes, I think is a really interesting way of looking at things.
Well, I'll give you a little more insight to what got me started on this path. I was at a company, like my manager, like the company, and then one day the company effectively split in two. And both sides said, come with us. I thought I'd just be sitting there doing my job, growing, but I had a decision to make. And the question was, how do I make this decision? So I had to think about, where am I trying to go, and which of these two options is going to take me on the path I want to be? I quickly realized, wait, I have more than two options. There's other companies out there as well. And I had to define, what is the goal, what is the path I'm looking for, and then how well do these align? And that's really what we're doing with any job. And you should think of the job not just who's paying me the most money, but what's that path that I'm on? I grew up playing chess, and so we were taught, always think multiple moves ahead, not just what this job can do for me, but what can additional future jobs happen, or what becomes available based on this path.
So I'm very intrigued by your 6-month career path. You sit back and think, where is my career going? What questions do you ask yourself? Because I think for many of us, if you're not a planner, it's quite an odd thing to do. I'm going to sit down and think about my career. Well, I'm going to think, well, I'm not very good at it, or, oh dear, I'm worried about this or something. You must be being much more positive, and you must have a structure to this.
There's a number of questions in the book, and they're also free on the website, so we'll give you that URL later and you can download them. But these questions are about your career, but also about your life. And this is a mistake most people make. They think in a job. There are questions such as, do I want to travel a lot? What percentage of travel? Do I want to spend a lot of time in meetings, working alone or working with a team? Definitely important questions. but we need to find a career that fits into our life, not creating a life around the job that we have. So it begins with questions about your life. Start with, where do you want to live? So for example, if you want to get to the top of the financial world, but you also want to live on a farm, you've got a problem, because to really be tied up in the financial world, you need to be in London or New York or a handful of other cities. You can't be in rural America or other parts in the UK. So you have to make a trade-off. You have to decide, when do you want children, for example? And this should apply to men as well as women. If, for example, you are on a tenure faculty track or you're trying to make partner at your law firm, there's a very clear timeline when you have a lot of stress, a lot of work. How do you coordinate that along with having children? And so we want to start with our lifestyle. How much flexibility do you want in your job? Ask these questions. Now, the key thing is that we're looking at components. A lot of people look at jobs wrong. They say, do I want this job, yes or no? Really, we should be looking at, what do I want in a job? Again, do I want lots of meetings, lots of travel, flexible time? What job is going to afford me the things I want to give me the life and the balance that I want?
There's some fantastic bits, fantastic piece of advice in there, and we will give out the URL at the end. Thank you. I wanted to pick up a couple of other things that you talked about, and the other one was a whole nother section where you talked about networking. Now, if I had a pound for every time a student tells me they can't network, I would have retired a long time ago. So what is it that terrifies people about networking, and how do you get over that?
People have the wrong assumption about networking. We have this view that comes from watching certain people or a Hollywood montage image of this. We think the networker is the person who walks into a conference and an hour later comes out with 20 business cards. Like, oh my God, how does she do that? That's not networking. That's collecting business cards. Here's the analogy I use. Imagine I pull out a dating app. I sit here, I just start swipe, swipe, swipe on the dating app. And all of a sudden I swipe right and a woman swipes right on me. Oh, look, I matched with Katie. Guess what? I am now dating Katie. You say, hold on, Mark. You're not dating Katie. You've just both swiped right. You're not in a relationship. You've expressed interest. But now, if you want to say you're dating Katie, if you want to call her your girlfriend, you have to go on some dates with her. You have to build that relationship. But people think, oh, I got someone's business card, or we connect on LinkedIn, therefore we're in each other's network. It's the same thing. You have to build a relationship. Now, there's a famous African proverb, if you can talk, you can sing. If you can walk, you can dance. And I'll add a third line to that. If you've ever made a friend, you can network. Because networking is relationship building. It might not be someone you're spending your birthday with. It might be someone you engage with more in a corporate environment. But it's a relationship. It's a level of friendship. It does not have to be meeting people in a crowded room and getting 20 business cards at once. It could be sitting down one-on-one for coffee in a quiet room somewhere. That's relationship building. So don't think about, how do I meet lots of people, or how do I go to crowded events? Think about, how do I get to know someone? And as you get to know people, regardless of whether you're connected on some social media site or have each other's business cards, if you have a relationship, you have a network.
And then why do you think networking is so important? Why do I need a network? Because it's one of the 10 key things you've told me I need to do.
Most people think of their network as something for when they need to find a job. So many people misuse it this way. Oh, I need to find a job. I need to go find a network. Your first mistake is you can't just meet someone and say, hi, stranger, nice to meet you. Can you help me find a job? You have to build it before you need it. But the second mistake is thinking that a network is just about finding a job. I carry with me a cell phone. Here's the thing about a cell phone. This connects me to a range of tools. There's a whole bunch of information I no longer have to carry in my head. And it's a few clicks away on my cell phone. If I need to know the fastest land mammal, boom, I can just look it up and have it. And it's all right there with me at all times. It makes me more powerful and effective. Your network is the same thing. At any point, if I need a job, I can reach out to my network. If I need a supplier, if I need a partner, if I need a candidate, I can reach out to my network. If I have a question, how's AI going to impact my career? I can go call people who know about AI. Is this tool going to be helpful or is it worth the cost? I'll call someone who knows that. I say call, email, however you reach out to people. Mm-hmm. Your network is a resource. It's the things everyone in your network knows, and it's the doors everyone in your network can open. And that's worth a lot more than just, how do I find my next job? So it's a tool, it's an extension of ourselves, just like our cell phone.
Fantastic, thank you. And the other thing I wanted to ask you about, you talk an awful lot about changing your mindset. And actually, it's one of the things you've been doing. You've been reframing my questions and making and looking at things in different ways. So mindset's obviously very important to you. So what do people commonly need to change about a mindset?
It is with each of these skills, it is that mindset change. The networking goes from, oh my God, I have to be in a crowded room, to I can just sit down with you one-on-one and that's networking. Wow, this is great. And so once you reframe these skills that can seem daunting or uncomfortable for some people, suddenly become more accessible. Let me give you a key mind frame shift. I worked with Professor Charles Lyserson, wonderful man, and he taught me this wonderful analogy. We're going to do a little bit of math here. We said quantitative skills were important, but this will be easy. Imagine you have a rectangle that's 4x10. You need to extend one of the sides by 2 units to maximize the area. Feel free to pause if you need a moment to think of that. The answer is that we add 2 units to the short side. We go from 4 to 6 to get 60 units. The other way is only 48.
Yep.
Conceptually, what are we doing? Those 2 extra units, when on the short side, are amplified by the long side, by the 10. The 2 gets amplified by the 10. If we put the 2 on the long side, they're only amplified by the 4. We only get 8 extra units. All of us have long sides and short sides. More than 2, in fact. Many of us focus just on our long sides. I work in technology. I need to continually learn new technology or I turn into a dinosaur. And I'm not saying don't work on your long side. But the ROI, the return that you get working on your short side, typically is much bigger. Imagine someone who might be brilliant at her or his technical skills. I don't mean software, I mean whatever domain you're in, but is a terrible communicator. And so whenever this person goes to present her ideas, and goes, oh, I can't follow her, they tune her out. If she just got a little bit better at communicating, we're not saying she's ready for that TED Talk stage, we're saying just a little bit better, just easier to follow, suddenly she's more effective, more people listen to her ideas. So all of us need to think about what are some of our short sides. If I can get a little bit better at networking, a little bit better at leading, at communicating, you suddenly become so much more effective.
I think that's very interesting. So would you, as part of your career planning, would you suggest people actually thought about their short and long sides perhaps?
100%. As you think about your career plan isn't just what's the next job I want. It's where are my skill gaps and how do I address those? And I've literally done this where I've said, where am I weak? What am I going to work on over the next couple years to strengthen that area? I can tell you, public speaking, by the way, that was one of them. I was a terrible public speaker. I would have been terrified doing this many years ago, but that was one of the things I worked on. In fact, most of these skills, here's another important mindset change. People think you either have it or you don't. There are natural leaders, natural communicators, natural networkers. There are natural footballers. There are natural flautists. That doesn't mean those of us who aren't natural at football or playing the flute can't learn. And in fact, what we see, the person who's a natural but puts in no effort and just says, well, I'm good enough, often gets surpassed by the person who says, I am committed to this. I am going to train and work at it. they will wind up doing better. So it doesn't matter if you're natural or not. It's about putting in the effort, and you can be world-class if you put in that time.
I think that's a fantastic piece of advice. And you're right, we all assume that the person that walks into the room and smiles and knows what they're doing or seems to know what they're doing is a natural networker, whereas actually they may not be. They, as you said, there may be a business card connection to bring that back. That's absolutely great. So I have a couple of other things we wanted to, I know we were going to discuss, and one was brain bump. So would you like to explain that?
One thing I realized from teaching these skills for years is that there's a disconnect. Where you read information isn't where you need information. You'll read my book sitting at home, you're listening to this podcast, maybe while you're at the gym. Say, okay, networking skills, well, this is great. And then 2 months later, you're at an event. Say, oh, what was I supposed to do? I've forgotten this all. Mm-hmm. And so we need to change up how we engage with information. So I found there was a shortage or something missing, a missing tool in the educational space, but this applies to marketing and branding as well. So what I did is created a tool called Brain Bump. This is a completely free tool, free for everyone. We take content from books, blogs, podcasts, different sources. The key ideas go into the app as little tips. It's what you would highlight in a book. It's the quote or two, a couple lines from a show. It's what you want to remember. Those go into the app. They're organized not by time, but by topic. Think like hashtags. You can access it in one of two ways. I'm going to talk about how the app works, but then we're going to talk generally what this means. So you can say, oh, I'm walking into that conference. What were those networking tips? And just out of your pocket, you pull out your phone, open the app, you tap networking, and there's all the tips. Here are icebreaker questions. Here's how to end a conversation. Here's how to do this, how to do that, right there when and where you need it. Or you might say, you know, I'm a new manager, and I've been reading Mark's book or another book, but it's hard to remember. I can't interrupt a conversation. I can't say, time out, I've got to go get this information. We know spaced repetition works, but we don't have a test, so we're not making flashcards to study. So think of something like a daily affirmation or a daily Bible verse. The app, you don't even have to open it. You get a daily reminder when you need it. So I might set up that leadership tip to pop up every day at 9 a.m. on my phone. Right as I'm going into the office, I get a reminder of that tip. At 6 p.m., my marriage is on the rocks. I'm also reading a book on how to make my marriage better. I get that tip at 6 p.m. right as I go home. And the key here, what we're doing is we're making sure the information is geotemporally relevant. Why this matters, obviously, if you're learning some of these skills like those in the book, I recommend download the app. It's completely free. Get the app to help retain and use this information. But as marketers, we have to recognize that a lot of channels are misaligned. When you think, for example, about social media or email, these are chronologically oriented. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to evergreen content from thought leaders or from brands, what happens is we push it out. We just say, okay, well, I'm a expert on leadership and I'm going to put out at 3 o'clock this afternoon, here's my leadership idea of the day. And my audience, even if they see it, even if they happen to be on that channel that day, they might think, yeah, great tip, Mark, but that's not relevant because right now I'm focused on getting clients or hiring people or raising money. So I'm going to ignore it. It doesn't help me. And because it's chronologically oriented, they don't save it and go back. Are you really looking at social media posts from 6 months ago? Mm-hmm. You're not. So these broadcast methods work for perhaps news, perhaps something that has temporal relevancy in a global scale. But when it comes to personal relevancy, temporally or geographically, we need to move to a pull model where the recipient can choose what content to get when it is most relevant. That's something that for various technological reasons, we couldn't do throughout most of history. And it's only recently, now we're carrying our cell phones with us, that we can start to do this. I think this is going to be a big shift in how we convey information and how brands need to market and share information. So something to keep in mind about what I think is the future of media. But certainly, if you get my book, or even if you don't get the book, get the tips in the app because it's completely free.
Fantastic. Mark, that's been an amazing overview of career planning. Would you like to give that the URL, please?
I'm going to give you two URLs. The first is for the book. Go to thecareertoolkitbook.com. There you can learn more about the book, including where to buy it. You can get in touch with me, follow me on social media. I put out new articles every week, and there's a number of free resources. Go to the resources page. You'll get the career questions, get a bunch of other stuff, all free. That's at thecareertoolkitbook.com. And then we mentioned the Brain Bump app, where even if you don't get the book, you can get the app with all the tips for free and tips from a bunch of other books, blogs, podcasts, and you can put your own information in if we don't yet have the source you want. You can get that at brainbumpapp.com. You can find it in the app stores as well, but if you go to brainbumpapp.com, you can follow links to the stores and learn a little more about how the app works.
Mark Hirschberg, thank you so much for that. And a reminder to everybody to go and away and schedule in your 6-month career plan checkup. Mark, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.